Hello, everyone, and welcome back to New Books in Biography. I'm Mark Klobis, your host for this channel. Today we'll be talking with Charles Strozier about his new book, Your Friend Forever, A. Lincoln, The Enduring Friendship of Abraham Lincoln and Joshua Speed. Charles, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's glad. Good to be on the show.
It's good to have you on the show. Charles, I wonder if you could start us off by telling us something about yourself.
Well, I am a professor of history at City University of New York and also a practicing psychoanalyst. And I've been, so I'm a historian and a shrink. And both of those have been doing for, well, I've been a historian for about 45 years. And I've been practicing for the last, that is actually seeing patients for the last 30 years. I've always been in psychohistory. And I was one of the early people in it going back to the 1960s. For many years, I actually didn't see patients. I used to say I had a large and thriving practice, but all my patients were dead. But now I actually do and find it quite wonderful. My first university job was in Springfield, Illinois, and I was all of 28 years of age in 1972, and I sort of stumbled into my work on Lincoln. I had been really in something, my PhD was in something totally different, but what else can one do in Springfield, Illinois except study Lincoln? So that was my first book that came out in 1982, and now 35 years later, I published my second book. So I like to say every 40 years or so, I do another book on Lincoln.
So what led you to decide to write this book now? Basically, what about the topic led you to decide that this would be your 40-year odyssey book?
40-year odyssey. Well, I have been thinking about the issues in this book literally since the mid-70s. And I had in my first book, which was really a psychological study of pre-presidential Lincoln, that is Lincoln up to 1860, talk about his marriage, about his childhood, all the kinds of issues that are relevant for understanding young Lincoln, in that book, dealt with his relationship with his best friend, Joshua. That caused an enormous debate, controversy that extended over the next few decades. And I've been following the literature, needless to say, and continuing to read about Lincoln. Even though I was writing books about other topics, I noted there were sort of two streams of books and articles that were disagreeing with each other, but they all were basically disagreeing with me about the meaning of this friendship. Basically, one what it stirred initially in the 1980s was that the friendship must have been sexualized and that it was a homosexual relationship. And that was the beginning of sort of gay Lincoln and became a very important theme that continues. And that stirred, which I don't agree with, and those books then stirred among more traditional Lincoln scholars a whole series of books disagreeing, and I didn't agree with their arguments. So having felt for many, from the last few decades, that they're all wrong, I thought, it's really time to revisit this and treat the subject in the depth that it deserves. And so that's what motivated me to basically to write this book.
I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about who Joshua Speed was and why he plays a role in this controversy. I'd like to, as you do in your book, go over the friendship in greater detail, but it might help if we learn a bit first as to who Joshua Speed was and how much of a role he played over the course of Abraham Lincoln's life.
Right. A very important figure. Most people don't really know about him, and he's been, even in the Lincoln literature, even in the biographies, everybody mentions his name, but he's very much of a minor player, I think, unfortunately. Joshua Speed was 5 years younger than Lincoln, so he was born in 1814, and he was born on a plantation in Kentucky. His father, Father John, owned and ran a major plantation, had dozens of slaves. The number fluctuated over time, but he was one of the largest slave owners in Kentucky, just outside Louisville, 7 miles outside Louisville, although now it's been pretty much absorbed by the by Louisville. And they raised hemp, which made the rope you wrapped around the bales of hay, bales of cotton. So that with the expansion of cotton, became a really critical crop. And John became really very rich and had numerous children, 12 overall, and built this imposing house. And Joshua did not love, was very close to his mother, Lucy, who was a gentle, kind, wonderful woman, but did not get along with his father. Interestingly, Farmington, which was the name of the plantation in Louisville, was about 70 miles from where Lincoln was born in Kentucky, in a very, very downsized log cabin, shall we say. So it's sort of interesting, you know, within 5 years, these two figures, one, Joshua Speed, to the manor born at Farmington, and Lincoln really not that far away in his log cabin.
Yeah, I think you put it in the book is that 70 miles away and worlds apart.
And worlds apart, exactly. And Speed first was sent off, was educated locally and kind of what we would say homeschooled. But then he was sent off to a boarding school for a while. Didn't like it, came home, got sick, came home. Father told him to go back. He went back, but when he was 16, he just decided he wanted to get, I think, really, although I don't have the letter to prove this, he wanted to get away from his father. And he went to Louisville and worked in a store, which is what young men like that did. And you lived in the store. You lived in above the room above the store. And he worked there for a number of years, for about 4 or 5 years. It's not clear exactly when he came to Springfield, but he decided to. A lot of people from Kentucky, a lot of young, ambitious people from Kentucky went to Springfield. It was sort of, you know, Illinois, there was new opportunity, it was relatively close. There was a sort of an emigration. He wasn't alone, and he had an uncle named Bell who had actually gone to Springfield, and that probably was why he specifically chose Springfield rather than another town, and arrived in 1834, and as a 20-year-old. Bell, probably his father, helped set him up with a dry goods store, and he built a store on the west side of the square. And from the get-go was a successful businessman. And he proved in his lifetime, he died actually as a very rich man, but he proved to be successful. It was difficult because you had to sold all kinds of diverse products and you had to buy stuff on credit and then people sometimes didn't pay. And anyway, he quickly became, he was very affable, outgoing, friendly, appealing young man. He quickly made friends with the growing group of professionals in town, became particularly close to William Butler, who was to play an important part in his life and Lincoln's life. And then within a few years, maybe we'll talk about his relationship with Lincoln, became very close to Lincoln. And he then left Springfield in 1841. So his father died the year before. And the family wanted him to come back. He didn't want to go back until his father died, go back to Farmington. But his family, large family, they wanted, he was sort of the de facto leader of the family. And they really urged him to come back. And he did, and he went back, and he got married in 1842. And for a while worked, he sort of helped the family run the plantation. He ran another farm, they used to call them euphemistically, in the 1840s, had slaves, and then decided he really didn't want to work his farm anymore, quotation marks, and moved to Louisville and became in the 1850s, became a very successful businessman, owned a hotel, was president of a bank, worked on a railroad, and was really one of its leading citizens. He was always involved in the periphery of politics. He ran once in the state legislature, but he sort of moved on. Everybody knew him. Everybody liked him. He was a power broker without actually holding office. He was never a senator and never a governor or anything like that. And in the beginning of the war, he continued to write Lincoln after he left Springfield, although they were not nearly as close as they were in Springfield. But the very beginning of the war, although he did not vote for Lincoln, which is in 1860, he wrote him saying he wasn't going to do that. He played a very important role, actually, in running, basically running guns and trying for the pro-Union supporters in Kentucky, and keeping the state politically until the sort of late summer, keeping the state politically in the Union. After that, it was not so critical. But Lincoln said he hoped to have God on his side, but he had to have Kentucky. And Speed was an important figure. After that, he made a number of trips to the White House. He would sit around and converse with Lincoln and talk about the old days. And somebody, it was a male old friend whom Lincoln could trust. And it can be lonely to be president, I think. Mm-hmm. And presidents generally turn to a very small number of people whom they can talk honestly and openly about the things that are bothering them. So he's played that role during the war, which was an important role. And then after the war, he was particularly eager to share with Herndon, as the Lincoln's former law partner, who was gathering what really was the first oral history in American history, massive oral history. And Speed was very important in writing letters, telling Herndon everything he knew about Lincoln, sitting for interviews, and that body of material was really extremely important. And he then, in the 70s, 1870s, he also wrote a short memoir, which was very important in terms of his relationship with Lincoln. And he died in 1882, died a very rich man, and widely respected and beloved.
You described the course of his life just now, and you, in doing so, you talk about this intersection with Lincoln. I was wondering if we could go back a bit to how they first met and where Lincoln was at that point in his life, because one of the things you do in your book when you talk about this is how, on the one level, you have Joshua Speed, this very successful businessman, and then you have Abe Lincoln, who's at a very different point in his life, career-wise. And yet you describe how their personal relationship, as it develops with a very different dynamic.
Yes. Lincoln had arrived April 15th, 1837, arrived in Springfield not in good shape. He came from New Salem. He was on the road. Everybody who knew him liked and admired him, and he had just become finally certified as a lawyer, which was actually quite a long drawn out process. It took him 3 or 4 years to finally sort of read the law and then get finally certified. And he had been the leader of the Whigs in the state legislature. Every other year. It met at the time, and he had been instrumental in organizing the move from Vandalia, a sort of swampy town in southern Illinois, moving the state capital to Springfield, which coincided with him sort of finally getting certified as a lawyer, and it was time for him to step up. So he arrived on April 15th, 1837, sort of well-known and admired, but he still carried what he called his national debt from when a store that he bought with someone named William Barry in New Salem that had gone belly up. Barry drank himself to death, Lincoln had to absorb the debt. Everything he seemed to try except law in New Salem kept failing. He tried surveying, he wasn't a good surveyor, and he ran the post office for a little while and seemed to sit around and read all the papers rather than do his job very well. So he was moving forward in his life, but not very rapidly. And he had the one thing that stirred a lot of hope for him was he fell in love with and was engaged with Anne Rutledge. People used to think that that was a the myth of his relationship with Rutledge, but recent scholarship has shown that she was a lovely young woman. She had been engaged to somebody who left town and didn't come back, so they didn't talk marriage until she felt she was free. He was definitely going to marry her, and then suddenly in August of 1835 she died. Within like a week, and he was devastated and suicidal. And he told a friend that he was afraid to carry a pocket knife. So he was not emotionally stable. And that was just, one can't know how he responded to the death of his mother, who died when he was 9. But I think it's reasonable to assume that his very definite clinical depression after the death of Anne Rutledge. Lots of evidence. People set up basically a kind of a suicide watch. Now, you're not going to lock a door in New Salem, you know, 25 cabins strung out along a dirt road. But they watched him, and everybody who talked to Herndon later told him how he had been distraught and wild and really very disturbed after her death. And that kind of exaggerated response probably evoked the despair that he felt after the sudden death of his really deep, very beloved mother when he was 9.
One of the things you get into at this point in the book is you talk about how they viewed depression back then, how the word that they used that you mentioned is hypochondria, I believe, and how Lincoln reduced that to hypo and would refer to it almost as if it was a companion of his rather than this debilitating condition that he was coping with.
Yeah, companion, yes. I mean, he almost affectionately talked about his hypo in letters. I think it was because it was a companion because it was so much a part of his experience at that moment, at that point in his life, that he did refer to it often because it was so central to what he was dealing with. So, but he arrived, he's arrived as a troubled young man, 28, and he didn't have any money. He had a lot of debt. He had this great potential that everybody recognized. But I think he felt it. He felt his own potential greatness. But he certainly hadn't done much to realize it. And he was going to begin practice with John Todd Stewart. he did begin practice, but he was going to live in the back of the store, back of the law offices. So on this sunny April day, he stumbled into Speed's store to buy the material for a bed that he was going to then have a carpenter make. Now, I think he must have, Speed had been there, had been in town already 3 years, and reported later how he had heard Lincoln give a couple of speeches, was very impressed with him, and it greatly admired him. Whether they had met, Lincoln almost certainly knew who Speed was. They were not friends, but they weren't. It was too small a town for people, and New Salem was too close to Springfield for them not to have had some. And they were both involved in Whig politics, for them not to have some sort of overlapping acquaintance. But basically, they didn't. They certainly weren't friends, but they were acquaintances. So Lincoln walked into the store, walked around, and asked if he could buy the materials for a bed, Speed said, "Well, it'd be $17." And Lincoln said, in a sad, melancholy tone that Speed said later was the most melancholy, and he had the most melancholy look that he had ever seen on anyone. He said, "Well, I just don't have $17. Do you think you could give me the material on credit, and I'll try to pay you by Christmas?" This is April, by Christmas. And if I should succeed at this law business, then I'll be able to pay. And if not, I don't know what I'll do. And Speed said, "Look, I live upstairs. I have a large double bed. Why don't you come. Why don't you stay with me? Lincoln, without a word, picked up his two saddlebags, which had his entire life's possessions at that point, walked upstairs, deposited them in the room, and came downstairs and said, "Well, Speed, I moved."
So they are now roommates, and as you describe, that they're roommates before they really become friends, that for a while they live together, and the friendship develops only just a little bit later on.
Yes. And you know, it is very important to understand that two men sleeping in the same bed was part of social custom. And Lincoln, of course, had grown up with a lot of, after his father remarried, after his mother died, there were a lot of children in the cabin. Everybody just tumbled into bed. You put the boys in one bed and the girls in another bed. So that was very common when Lincoln came to New Salem. It was very common to stay with the various people he lived. He slept in beds, as everyone did. Inns at the time, simply put, you're depending on the number of people traveling and the size of the inn. You would just have two rooms and maybe just have a bed in each, and people would pile in together, separate the sexes, but people would pile in bed together. One historian has counted that Lincoln slept with, in various circumstances, slept with 14 people before he met Speed. So, and that was not unusual for him, and nor was it unusual, for the time and the culture. So the fact that they tumbled into the bed together was not surprising. Social custom and individual experience are not always congruent. And the fact that it was not uncommon for two men to be sleeping together doesn't mean that it was insignificant that Lincoln spent nearly the next 4 years sleeping with a man, sleeping with Joshua Speed, who turned out to be not only his best friend, but his only really intimate friend in his life. Lincoln had a way of making people, particularly other men, but also women, or older women, older maternal women, were very fond of him and protected him and stuff. But he was a man's man. And people had a way of thinking that they were very close to him. But he never really opened up to anybody. And as you said, with Speed, it seems from the texture of their relationship, from everything one can gather, and of course they didn't write letters to each other because they were living together and sleeping in the same bed. So it didn't leave the relationship, didn't leave contemporary pieces of evidence. But it seems after about a year, year and a half, the real closeness and intimacy and texture of the friendship changed, and they became absolutely devoted to each other, inseparable, really a kind of a merger, and an openness and a sharing between the two of them that really neither opened up that way with anybody else in their life, and particularly Lincoln.
And you mentioned that they developed this relationship and they have this great closeness during a time of Lincoln's life when he is undergoing a degree of difficulty in his political career. And I was wondering if you could speak to that difficulty and how Speed, the role that Speed served during that period.
Well, his political career, I mean, he was a rising star. And you know, he arrived in town as the key figure in the legislature that had made Springfield the capital. Stewart, his law partner, was older and a little bit older and more established and better known. Stewart was elected to Congress before Lincoln, but Lincoln was the rising star, and everybody recognized that. And he was brilliant once he started practicing law, he was brilliant as a lawyer. And he was particularly good with juries and, you know, common people, and he never spoke down to people, and he was funny. He was, you know, he had an incredible sense of humor, Abraham Lincoln. He had an incredible sense of humor. He was wonderful. People would listen to him for hours, and they would gather around when he was like riding the circuit in the law practice. They would gather around just to listen to him. All the lawyers on the circuit would gather in the evening just to hear him tell stories. He was quite remarkable in that way.
I love the story that you relate in the book to when Martin Van Buren comes and visits in, I think it was 1841, the former president of the United States, and he happens to be in Springfield, and all these leading people come together, and Van Buren tells some stories, other people tell some stories, and they have to finish the night when Abraham Lincoln's telling stories because Martin Van Buren is in so much pain from laughing.
From laughing, absolutely. No, that's an interesting story. And of course, Van Buren's a Democrat. And basically the Democrats went out to Rochester, just outside Springfield, went out to visit with him, and they wanted to, you know, they wanted to make them get into the line of vision of the former president. But they knew that Lincoln would be such a good companion that they brought him along. They brought along this local Whig. And then he absolutely stole the show. And Van Buren had to send him off because he was laughing so hard in the evening. He had to go to sleep. I talk about this actually at greater depth in my first book about Lincoln, that he was at a point in his life where he aspired to greatness and felt that he had the potential to be great without really doing anything to realize that. So that he wasn't, his dream as, and I think it's a reasonable guess. I think his dream was to be a great senator like Henry Clay. That was his idol, Henry Clay. And, you know, but he was too young. It wasn't like he was unrecognized. He was just on the make. You know, his very famous speech in 1838, the young man might see him speech. Sort of, if you read it psychologically, it's clear that he sees himself as somebody who will be great, even though he's a rising star, but he's not yet great. So I wouldn't say his career was troubled.
Aaron, I was referring to that chapter where you talk about the winter of discontent, and I was talking about that career issue he had, but I was getting ahead because we hadn't quite gotten to the broken engagement with Mary Todd. So I juxtaposed the two, and I apologize for that.
Well, the contrast is between his success as a emerging figure politically and his very troubled emotional state. And I think that's the tension. That's what's so interesting and significant about this period from 1837 to 1840-42 is people really, because he was so closed and not shut down, but cut off from revealing his real feelings to people, others didn't understand how much he was in despair, and very unhappy and often depressed and struggling to get his footing.
But at the same time, he isn't trying to establish these emotional relationships. He has this courtship of Mary Todd. And I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit and how, you know, what happens there in terms of his personal life.
So he's living with Speed. By sometime around 1839, he and Speed become extremely close. And he's drawn to he's drawn to women, wants to find somebody, and one day stumbles, meets in the winter of 1839 to 40, met Mary Todd. She had come to live with her sister, Elizabeth Edwards, and they were, you know, she was as Elizabeth, Mary was lively, engaging, outgoing, very smart, very political, knew French fluently, could quote long passages of poetry, could dance. She had been extremely well educated in Lexington, Kentucky. So, and she was really a lively young woman. She couldn't stand her stepmother, and nor could her older sister Elizabeth. And so they Elizabeth left when she got married to Ninian Edwards, and they came to Springfield. And then when a room became available in the house, basically, Elizabeth invited Mary, her sister Mary Todd, to come stay with her. It would seem that I should add that Speed was a more he could dance, he could he was more social, he could banter, he could he was more at ease in social situations. Lincoln was never at ease in that kind of social situation. He was awkward, he was tall, he was sort of gawky. He, you know, in the company of men, he could retain everybody's attention and be the center of attention. But in the coterie, which is what they called the home and the dances, and they played violins, and they were very, you know, on what they called Aristocracy Hill, just to the southwest of town. And they had the big parties and Speed was very much at home in the coterie, but he obviously started taking his friend Lincoln. It would seem, as best one can tell, that almost immediately when Lincoln saw Mary, he was enchanted. They on the face of it, they couldn't be more different. You know, short, 5'3" or 5'4" woman versus this tall 6'4" man, different backgrounds, but they shared a lot of values, and they shared interest in poetry, and Lincoln was enchanted with her. And Elizabeth said later that he would sit and lost in thought and enchanted with gazing upon her with an enchanted look. So it's they started basically dating, and he would go over to the coterie on a regular basis. And at some point, you know, maybe in the spring of 1840, maybe in the summer of 1840, at some point they were clearly talking about marriage. And this is it's not clear exactly when. There's some disagreement about this, but I don't think there's any reason to. In fact, I know there's no reason to doubt that they were talking about marriage, because when Lincoln ended the engagement, everybody talked about the broken engagement. They talked at the time. So you have to be engaged in order to break the engagement. So they didn't exchange rings. And this is an interesting detail, sort of why they didn't make it sort of more formal. And I think one can't say for sure why they didn't make it more formal. Maybe Lincoln was cautious. Maybe Mary sort of wanted to delay for her own reasons. That we can't. But it's not like they delayed for years. I mean, mm-hmm. by the summer of 1840, they were engaged and in love, and planned the wedding was planned for the 1st of January 1841. And that sometime that fall, probably mid to late December, Lincoln suddenly, without any good explanation, broke the engagement. And there have been, you know, all kinds of explanations. Why the two main explanations were, well, the old theory was that he was sort of afraid of the haughty Todds, and that they were, you know, he realized he didn't feel that he could ever match them socially. That's not a good explanation, you know. Lincoln said that one D was good enough for God, but the Todds required two. So I don't think that Lincoln was not intimidated by anybody. certainly not by the lordly Todds. The theory, of course, that started after my first book came out was that the relationship with Speed was sexualized, that they were homosexual lovers, and the reason he broke off the engagement is because he couldn't face the idea of, at the moment of just before marriage, he couldn't face the idea of being with a woman. The explanation that opposes that developed again after my book came out in the last couple of decades, is to place the emphasis on Matilda Edwards, who was a cousin of Ninian Edwards, who came to beautiful 18-year-old, beautiful blonde, really lovely, apparently very beautiful young woman, came to live at the Edwards home in November, and that she apparently received some 20 offers of marriage, including from Stephen Douglas, and she spurned Stephen Douglas, who also lived in the same town. You have to remember, I mean, it's amazing, this period, given the later history. But she said she didn't feel that, she thought Stephen Douglas had bad morals, which was absolutely true, right? So, and you know, the theory is that he fell in love with Elizabeth the Edwards, and therefore broke the engagement because he figured he didn't love Mary. That also, she died in a few years, about a decade later, so Herndon was never able to interview her, but she told Elizabeth Edwards that later, and of course she lived in the house with Mary Todd, and Elizabeth lived in the house for a full year later before she got married to somebody else, Edward Strong. And she, Elizabeth specifically asked her, why, what did she feel about Lincoln, and was Lincoln, you know, in love with her and interested in her? And Elizabeth, who was a good witness, reported later to Herndon that she said that Lincoln never stooped to pay me a compliment. Now, I think that's pretty strong evidence. What happened is that once Lincoln broke the engagement with Mary Todd, then he went into a very deep depression, clinical, again, suicidal depression in January of 1841, in the wake of it. Felt terrible, felt guilty. He felt awful about hurting Mary's feelings. And the explanation that the rumor mill generated was that he had fallen out of love with Mary, and that's why he broke off the engagement. That ignores, and I just want to emphasize how serious the depression was. He moved to the Butler home, and they took away his razors and his anything that was a sharp instrument. He was in bed. He was hallucinating. You know, in clinical depression, really serious suicidal clinical depression, people often hallucinate. It's most extreme case. And for about a week, people use that word, in fact. His friend Doc Henry, Anson G. Henry used that. Speed himself talked about how crazy, was crazy as a loon. The Butlers talked about it. I mean, you know, that's really abundant evidence that this was a very, very serious depression. And what I think nobody's noticed, and this is the heart of my book, the heart of the argument in my book, is that Speed, in the late summer of 1840, right around the time that Lincoln is falling in love with Mary and getting engaged, Speed decided to go back to Kentucky. And as I mentioned earlier, his father had died the year before, and the family had been imploring him to return. And he started putting ads in the paper in late August, and then throughout the fall, calling in his debts. this is how you ran a dry goods store. You had people owed you a lot of money, and it was just inevitable because it was, you know, pre-early stages of capitalism and not much currency, and the currencies were all crazy. And you had to, and that's why a lot of people went under, and why Speed was such a good businessman, because he was able to navigate all that and keep his, not get too heavily indebted, but inevitably he had a lot of debts. So he put in ads calling in his debts. You got to pay because I'm leaving. I'm leaving town. And they, so he's calling in his debts and selling the store. And he sold the store to his, Charles Hurst, who was one of his clerks, who was also, along with Herndon, living in the dorm above the store. Which is an important detail. In other words, Lincoln and Speed were not alone in that room. They were in the same double bed, but there were two other beds. Herndon lived there for a couple of years, and then Charles Hurst lived there. And Charles Hurst negotiated the sale of the store. And the notice of the sale of the store was in the local paper on January 1, 1841. The day, so what it marked was he broke the engagement with Mary in the wake of the separation from Speed and the loss of Speed and the terrible psychological distress that threw him into.
So it was incredibly emotionally tumultuous of a time for him. He was in this relationship with Mary that seemed to be trending, moving in the direction of marriage, and then he cuts it off. His closest friend prepares to move away, and he really seems to be in this period of great turmoil.
Yes.
All at the same time.
All at the same time. But they're sequenced. In other words, he's having worked, having gotten close to Speed, having opened up with Speed, having found someone he could finally trust, whom he was with all the time, even sometimes out on the circuit. And he didn't ride the circuit for as long as he did somewhat later. So it was like maybe 12, 14 weeks of the year at that point in his life. When he'd go out, you know, the whole circuit of judges and lawyers would all ride in this big circuit area in central Illinois. And sometimes Speed would just take off and go just to be with him and watch him in court and be with him. Then they'd come back. Now, you know, it's impossible to say how often he went, but there's some documented cases where Speed was out on the circuit with him.
So it wasn't just Lincoln who was missing Speed. Speed was also missing Lincoln. And that's something that becomes apparent, as you explain, in 1841 as this move takes place.
Absolutely. No, they were inseparable. They were, you know, very, very close male friends and particularly and opened up to each other in a way that neither one ever seemed to open up to anybody else. And so the loss of, you know, the imminent loss of Speed, my argument, the imminent loss of Speed threw Lincoln into a kind of panic. And in that state of panic, he couldn't deal with being married. So it's not, you know, beautiful young Matilda. That's sort of neither here nor there. He loved Mary. But he couldn't deal with being married to her at that point. And so he broke the engagement without a good explanation, including without a good explanation to himself. And that's what is so interesting and complicated about this whole story, about this narrative, because he didn't understand it. And if he had understood it, he would have been able to explain it to her better, could have made sense of it. But he just had to abandon, because he felt abandoned by Speed. He had to abandon Mary. He couldn't stay with Mary. And then he became suicidal.
And you mentioned that Speed postponed his departure to help Lincoln. He eventually goes. And then Lincoln goes and basically undertakes an extended stay with Speed and his family on their plantation.
That's in the late summer of that same year of 1841. They're back together. They go for long walks. Speed, Lincoln gets to know the Speed family, particularly Lucy, whom he adored. She sort of mothered him. As I mentioned, older maternal women often were very close to and fond of Lincoln. She gave him a Bible that he treasured. And in that experience, Speed suddenly fell in love with Fanny Henney and said later to Herndon that while he had regarded Lincoln's depression as a lot of nonsense earlier, he suddenly experienced some of the same doubts and confusions that Lincoln had earlier experienced. That's exactly what sort of Speed's later account of this to Herndon. So with Lincoln at his side, he suddenly falls in love with Fanny Henney and plans to get married to her. But then Lincoln had to go, you know, he had to go back to Springfield to get back to work. And Speed came back to town with him. He didn't want to lose Lincoln at that point, and I would dare say Lincoln didn't want to lose Speed again. So they come back to Springfield and they spend that fall together, and are back again as close friends. But then Speed had to leave to go get married on February 15th, 1867. So he leaves on January 1st, 1842, leaves Springfield to go back to Louisville to marry Fanny Henney. and that's the occasion for a series of letters in January and February 1842 that Lincoln writes to Speed. We don't have Speed's letters. Lincoln didn't keep them, obviously, but Speed kept Lincoln's letters. So we have only half the correspondence. But those letters are the most important, most revealing, most open, and letters that Lincoln ever wrote in his life. They're absolutely incredible. And what Lincoln does is vicariously, what he identifies with Speed, he sort of puts himself there into his life and talks a lot about how, you know, our friendship is everlasting, and I know what you're feeling, and he completely projects his own experience into what Speed is feeling.
You mentioned at this point Lincoln seems to be over his depression, and now he's helping Joshua Speed through his.
Yes, and not only helping him through his depression, but helping him through the same doubts about marriage that had so immobilized Lincoln a year earlier, and tells him he doesn't need to be depressed, he doesn't need to worry about Fanny being sick, he doesn't need to worry about Fanny dying. I mean, all things that you have to infer what Speed had written to him, but basically he's making the relationship his own, you know, kind of vicariously working through his issues in those letters. And the turning point comes when Speed does get married on February 15th, and the next day literally tumbled out of bed in order to write Lincoln and basically say that, again, we have to infer this, but basically say that, you know, he was able to consummate the marriage and the sky didn't fall in. And that letter Lincoln gets on February 24th, receives, it could, you know, takes 10 days or so for letters to travel at that period. Gets a letter on February 24th and then writes Speed February 25th. And that's the turning point in the emotional life of Abraham Lincoln, because he begins by saying, I received your earlier letter, but I was down at the Williams place, but I didn't respond. I was waiting for the promised one of the 15th, of the 16th, I'm sorry. And he says, I am glad that everything worked out. I am still shaking 10 hours later. This is a 33-year-old man, mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln, who, after he receives the letter from Speed about how things worked out okay with his marriage. Now, really, it's not his marriage. It's the consummation of the marriage. Lincoln is his hand, he is still shaking 10 hours later. And it's an amazing letter. And he then goes on to describe what he assumes must have been the case, and that, you know, our fears are all the worst sort of nonsense, et cetera. He is tremendously relieved, tremendously relieved. And then he writes, with that letter, he writes a separate letter, because, of course, Lincoln at that point knows Fanny. He had met her. He was with Speed back in Kentucky when Speed fell in love with Fanny. And he thought Fanny was wonderful, beautiful, black-eyed Fanny Henning. So Lincoln, in his February 25th letter of 1842, writes a separate letter to Speed, which is lighthearted and friendly. And that's and he says, Fanny will be confused why you don't hear from me. So I write another letter, which you can show to her. So the real letter, the secret letter, is the one that is really, that talks about what he's really feeling. And then the second letter written so that, which is the fake letter to be written so that, you know, so that Fanny can read it. In other words, it keeps the secret their relationships, their relationship with each other and their devotion to each other secret and apart from Fanny.
It was a fascinating comparison for me to what you wrote earlier in the book when you described his interaction with people, his storytelling, his joke telling, and how oftentimes that was a brave front that he put on. It was a way of disarming people, putting them at ease, and it helped to make all these friendships. But you describe how he does that while he's dealing with the hypo. And in a sense, it's like these two letters are the same thing. You have the letter that is the brave front that Joshua Speed can show everyone. And then there's that part of him that is in that letter that only Joshua Speed is supposed to be reading. That one part of him he's willing to really share, open himself up.
Right. No, I think that's a good point. And you it happens that in the collected works, the Lincoln's collected works, the two letters are side by side, so that the real letter is on the left page on the left, and the fake letter is on the right. So it makes it even more dramatic when you see them. And that you see, Lincoln vicariously worked through his incredibly deep confusions about intimacy by vicariously identifying with Speed in his relationship with Fanny. He helped him reach out to her. He helped her get married. And then when he does get married and it worked out okay, and the consummation was, the sky didn't fall in, that is the turning point in the emotional life of Abraham Lincoln. And he, at that point, within a matter of a month or so, he resumed his courtship of Mary, Mary Todd. And she had never stopped loving him, and rather graciously, I think, waited for him to wrestle his demons to the ground. She had other suitors, but she clearly, in her letters, she clearly was not interested in anyone else who was trying to court her. From Edwin Webb to even Stephen Douglas, the coterie was this big party, and everybody came, and he played violins and danced. And she was a very, very appealing young woman, but she was interested in Abraham Lincoln, and she waited. You know, they had no contact after the broken engagement in the end of 1840. No engagement until the spring and early summer of 1842. And when they began to meet, they met secretly. And I think that for good reason, because there had been such a scandal in Springfield when he broke off the engagement. And, they wanted to be sure that this was going to work out. They didn't want to have any prying eyes in gossipy Springfield. I lived in Springfield for 14 years, so I know about gossipy Springfield. and she played a very important, he almost had his duel in the summer in August with James Shield, and she played a role in that and wrote some satirical piece for the local paper. They were clearly meeting and falling in love again, and then they got married on November 4th and of that year, and about a week or so later, Lincoln wrote in a business letter to a colleague. At the end of the letter, he sort of added as a P.S. He said, "Nothing new here except my marrying, which is a matter of profound wonder."
And yet, this is also the point at which he and Joshua Speed, for understandable reasons, start to drift apart. I mean, they're still friends, but they no longer have that same intimacy. They're not obviously living in the same city or even the same state, and their connection becomes a bit more distant.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that the way to understand that psychologically is that Speed played this crucial role in helping Lincoln work through his deep confusions and struggles over intimacy and connection and love. And he was able to play that role through for Lincoln through his own marriage, and Lincoln's vicariously identifying with Speed. And once he resolved that, he was no longer central to the emotional life of Lincoln. So that he found his footing, worked through his core conflicts and confusions through his friendship with Speed. But then Speed, it wasn't like he was abandoned, but he no longer needed Speed in the same kind of way. So he gained Mary, and in the process of gaining Mary, he lost Speed. Mm-hmm. And they did, and they, of course, Speed was also gone, physically gone, was living in Louisville. Lincoln continued to handle some of his legal affairs, and they even had a spat. Speed felt that he was moving too slowly on some cases, and they had some disagreement, and Lincoln wrote a letter. It was upsetting to him to see a friendship such as ours die slowly by degrees. So, you know, kind of put into words what in fact was happening. And they remained friends. And the war, as I mentioned at the beginning of this one, talking about the life of Joshua Speed, sort of the war brought them back together. And those visits of Speed in the White House proved to be very important, I think, for both men solidifying in this moment of terrible political and military crisis for the country, rekindled some of the closeness and intimacy that they had felt many years before.
Hmm. Well, we've taken up a lot of your time, but before we go, could you tell us what you're working on now?
Well, actually, I'm not 100% committed to this book, but I want to do a book of the total correspondence between Lincoln and Speed, and have really contextualize the letters, particularly the important ones and the really crucial ones in January and February. But there are a lot of other. They continue to write. There's a very famous letter about slavery that Lincoln wrote Speed in 1855. And I think a book like that would be appealing as sort of would really get into the texture of their of what they wrote each other and their letters and do it over the course of their life, sort of focusing on the earlier period, but bring this correspondence between these two men that I think would continue to bring Speed out of the shadows where he should be. He should come out of the shadows for historians, but also sort of think more people to think more generally about this friendship, which I think is one of the great American male friendships. It's one of the great stories, and it's been either totally misunderstood or kind of lost. And so I think I want to That's what I want to do next.
So are you talking about a edition of their letters with annotations, or are you talking about a book that analyzes their correspondence and refers to passages?
The second.
Okay. So
be a lot of context. They wouldn't, I mean, the letters are annotated now. I mean, they've been published. But to fill in the story so that you really, you focus on the letters and you analyze the letters and you talk about what the background is to the letters, but you provide the context so that you can read the letters in that larger context.
It sounds like a fascinating project.
I'm going to take less than 40 years to do it.
you're rapidly reducing the timeline there. Well, thank you, Charles, very much for taking some time out of your schedule to speak with us today about your book about the friendship of Abraham Lincoln and Joshua Speed. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Well, thank you very much. Great, good questions, Mark.